Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 268 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her anger. Uh-oh, was that you looking so angry? Yeah, uh-huh. Well, before we begin this pretty cool episode, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okie dokie, here's your first reminder. Click on iTunes after the episode, rate and review the show, because I'm sitting here waiting to hear from you. Feedback, please, feedback. Feed me feedback. That's me. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Oh boy, it's another time with Elizabeth Bernstein. Yeah, you love her, you know you do. She writes the Bonds on Relationships column for the Wall Street Journal, which explores social psychology and the manifold aspects of human interactions. In her column, she focuses on how we can best relate to others and to ourselves. And oh boy, Elizabeth, you did it again. This column just got me, I don't know, angry. This is all about anger management for an angry time. Man, I'm telling you, Elizabeth, first of all, welcome back to the Her podcast. Oh my goodness gracious.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. So we're going to get another Elizabeth Bernstein lesson, all melding science on things, bonds and relationships. I can't even begin to tell you how timely this column was. I'm sure everyone who read it said to themselves, yep, it's about time someone addresses. So it was anger management for an angry time. Anger can be useful, but it's important to channel it strategically rather than let it consume you. So you look at all the headlines and people throwing things at each other and they're all angry about everything. And there's just everything is an angry platform out there. So talk to us. So let's dig into a little bit of that science that you do so beautifully. I like what you said when you were having a conversation with Maurice Schweitzer, who is a professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania and studies the regulations of emotions. Anger gives us drive, motivation, and purpose. It gives us the clarity we lack day to day. Now, wait a minute, Elizabeth. I thought anger was bad. Tell us about that.
Well, that's what's interesting. Anger can be very harmful. Too much of it, angry for too long, has some very destructive effects. But anger that's channeled correctly has an upside. And anger is actually an emotion that's adaptive for us. It is designed to alert us to danger. So when we're angry, suddenly we're paying attention to a perceived threat. Anger actually activates our fight or flight response. So in this way, it can be good. It can give us courage. It can give us motivation, energy to do something. And if we channel that correctly, hopefully we'll do something good. So the classic example is, you know, you can use your anger to try to right a wrong. So that would be great anger. You know, anger used for good purpose, the upside of anger, but it has a big downside too.
I love this one thing, this idea, and I think this is really important for the Her podcast listeners. Most of us are more comfortable being angry than anxious. Sit with that for a minute. Wait a minute. How does that work? How are we more comfortable being angry than anxious? And so could it be that we're alleviating some of that anxiety over life's uncertainties? And God knows we have enough of those these days, and our lack of control by getting angry. How does that work?
So this is really interesting. We really don't like to be anxious. Anxious is this feeling we get when everything, we feel out of control, everything's out of control, there's huge uncertainty. It's a really uncomfortable feeling. Anger is uncomfortable, but it's not as uncomfortable as anxiety, because with anger, we feel that, you know, we're taking some kind of control. If I'm mad at something, I'm blaming something. Even if I'm just venting, I have this energy that I feel I'm in control of. And so what we do, the psychologists call it upregulating. Many people, when they're anxious, turn to anger. They upregulate that emotion to anger because it makes them feel a little less uncomfortable.
I'm thinking of all the protests and a lot of the yelling and screaming that's going on out there, and a tremendous amount of what appears to me anger. I wonder if in this time, Elizabeth, of tremendous doubt, uncertainty, and fear, people are working it out through this outward expression of anger. What do you think?
I think so. I think the anxiety of our time, again, people are sort of looking to, you know, get rid of that anxiety, and they're using anger to do that. But also, if anger, the definition of anger is when we see an injustice or something we think is unfair, and we see a reason, something to blame, someone to blame. So I think that people are harnessing, they're done. They're seeing injustices, they're tired of looking at the same injustices over and over. So they're finally, they're angry, but they're finally trying to harness this anger into making a change. So I think when you see people marching, that's what's happening. I don't think it's any coincidence that it's happening in a time of great anxiety, but they are trying to harness that anger for good, for change, what they want to change. You know, and so it's something to watch, really. It's something to see.
It's interesting. You know, I'm loving connecting all these thoughts. I know for a fact that, you know, feeling more comfortable being angry than anxious is going to stick in a lot of people's heads. I don't think anyone really thinks about that. I think that they almost see them the same, or angry being more toxic. But what you're saying is that it's really a great way to sort of transform a lot of the feelings of anxiety into something more, as it were, productive or constructive. But on the other hand, you also inferred that there's a dark side to anger, and that is when you internalize too much of it, and then it becomes destructive, and you note that this is associated with a lot of medical disease, like high blood pressure and inflammation, infectious heart disease, stroke, cancer. So I think that that is really interesting. So can we just sort of now do what we love to do with you, Elizabeth, and go into the science? So can you walk us through This Is Your Brain on Anger?
So this is your brain on anger. What's essentially happening, and people don't, I think about it as much, something's actually happening in your brain. What's happening is that the activity is increasing in the areas that govern and process emotions. So my emotional brain, when I'm angry, is just firing up. But at the same time, the part of my brain that processes thinking, the cognitive processing center, is the activity there is just shutting down. So my emotional brain's taking over. It's overwhelming the thinking brain. What this means is you just stop thinking correctly. You do not think strategically when you are angry. And there's a ton of research on this that I looked at. It's fascinating. Anger makes it much harder for us to understand the other person's perspective. This is research-based. People who are angry judge others more harshly than they judge themselves. And then psychologists call this moral hypocrisy, when we judge somebody else for the same thing more harshly than when we would judge ourselves. People who are angry share less with others. People who are angry have less empathy. You can see where this is going. Angry is not helpful for our relationships. It's not helpful as a society.
I love it. And so some of the high points from what you've said. So when you're angry, you said that research basically diminishes our ability to understand other people's points of view. When you're basically going rah, rah, rah to somebody, how can you do what I love to recommend? And that is reflective listening. In other words, I heard you, may not agree with you, But what I'd like to do is summarize what you just said and then ask you, did I get that right? But how do you do that when you're angry? So what do you think of that?
It's true. It goes back to, you know, what's going on in your brain. Your brain is not thinking. The area that processes thinking, and this would be, you know, understanding other people, even the thought that I should stop and listen to this other person, really listen, like you're saying, reflectively listen, that part of your brain's shutting down. So we're not paying attention, we're not thinking right when we're angry. And this is the big danger, other than all the health dangers as well. But that, you know, a whole big area of danger is in the cognitive processing. It's much less sound when you're angry.
I love it. Now, you know, I'd like to now think about ways, and you've really gotten into this beautifully in your piece, of really kind of stopping all that craziness from happening in the first place. I think all of us, maybe even ourselves, have observed people who really, you could watch them just sort of control an angry situation where something could escalate. The escalation thing is where you really run into problems, because things can escalate into violence too. So how do you kind of stop it from consuming you? So you brought up exercise, meditation, and prayer. Talk to us about that.
So these things all have the ability, these three things, exercise, meditation, prayer, they have the ability to calm that physical effect that's happening in our brain, in our nervous system, to calm down that fight or flight response that's been activated. So when we pray, that's very much like meditation. And I've written about prayer before, as you know, and prayer, you know, calms us down, but also it has, research on prayer shows that it has an even better, stronger effect at calming us down than meditation, because we feel that maybe something out there is going to answer our prayers. So with meditation, we're calming ourselves, but we're not appealing for help. And so this appeal for help has even a stronger calming effect for people who do believe that it will. So that's interesting. So all these things calm your body down, and that's really the first thing you need to do when you're going to try to regulate your anger. It's to calm that physical response you're having down.
I love this one guy, a marketing consultant in New York, who named his Peloton bike the Anger Dispersal Unit. And, you know, my family does have a Peloton, and all I can say is, thank God. because that little Hummer has all kinds of sweat on it from really funky times where people really just literally need to de-stress and to calm down, ironically, by pumping up. You pump up, you calm down, because you're also at the same time through physical activity, especially a high-intensity interval type training, you're secreting endorphins, which are kind of the body's internal morphine system. And so you are feeling better by the end of the whole thing. And it gets your mind off that and into trying to beat that guy on the screen. So there you go. I love that part. Now, let's also look at the issue of really channeling anger into work, into a more of a productive way to be able to take negative thoughts and interrupt them. So people do it a lot of different ways, and that is to come up with almost self-talk, affirmations, feeling good about yourself. Tell us about those.
So, you know, these kinds of things, what anger really, what you want to do when you're angry is be strategic about it. You want to first figure out what you're angry for, about. You know, I could be angry, I want to be clear, I could kick the dog because my boss yelled at me, but how helpful was that? You know, you want to be clear, okay, I'm mad about work. Now, what do I do here that's working? So you want to identify that source of anger first. And then anger really, somebody I interviewed an expert explained it this way. He said it's like tuning a guitar. You want just enough tension on that string. So you don't want to go over into venting and let anger carry you away, but you want to keep it sort of harnessed for good. So, yes, throwing it into work if there's a situation. I talk to many people who are out there trying to make their workplaces more diverse right now because they're upset about injustices they see. You know, that's a classic example of seeing an injustice and trying to right it and using your anger for good. So that's what you want to do. But you have to really calm yourself down and then strategically think about what you want to do to make this work.
And at the same time, you know, it's interesting. One of my favorite anger management things is to walk over to my two beloved German Shepherds and just, you know, pet their fur. It's very calming. It's that little oxytocin moment. And I think that having a furry family member or feathery or whatever you have out there, scaly, you know, just keeping them in your life is extremely important too. Sometimes it's just a quiet connection that will recenter you and remind you of what's really important in life. That is it really worth spending your body dollars on to do that to yourself? So I think there's that too. Now you have some beautiful ways to be able to practice anger management. And this is all based upon experts. So the first one is pinpoint the source of your anger. What's that all about?
So, you know, as I briefly mentioned, anger, there it can come from several places. We can, there's two types of anger, really. We can be angry at something or lashing out at something or someone in front of us, but we're really mad about is something else. Again, as I said, you know, I yell at the dog, but I'm really mad about work. That's called integral anger. And then we can have incidental anger is different. It's where, you know, I really am mad at what's in front of me. I'm yelling at my sister and I'm really mad at her. So you want to be clear, though, because if you're just lashing out, if you're just activated because you're really mad about, you know, the fact that we're in a pandemic and you're just lashing out blindly at everybody, this is just not effective. It's not going to help you. You're going to have all these harmful health effects and think and cognitive processing effects. For what reason? Nothing. So the first thing you have to really do is pinpoint the source of your anger. Stop and ask yourself, you know, what am I really angry about? And is it, am I having a justified response? Am I overly angry? You know, am I just activated because I've been listening to, you know, the news all day? What's going on? What am I really angry about? And what can I do about it? So first, you really want to ask yourself some questions about your anger.
Excellent, excellent. Because then, if you do and you pinpoint it, you can then lay out a strategy. How do I really deal with this? Really, if the news is getting you that angry, I know what to do. Turn it off. Okay? Just turn the damn thing off because it's you can't stop it. It's 24/7. It's all insane and probably all fake news anyway, so who knows?
Well, you can't stop it, but you also want to acknowledge that it is activating you. You know, it's not just their anger. You're feeding off of it. You're listening to it. So now you're having that threat response to it, that fight or flight response to it. And here we're talking about with anger, we're going to fight it. So you want to sort of, I think it helps when people really understand that blather in the background when you have the TV on, that is activating you. That's why you need to turn it off.
I love it. I love it. Now, we just said, once you pinpoint it, you can think more strategically. So now let's go to the next point you made. Be strategic. All right. So what does that mean?
So you want to be strategic. You know, do you want to use your anger or right now? No, I'm trying to go to bed. I'm really late. It's the middle of the night. I can't sleep. I'm not going to use my anger right now. So first you want to ask yourself, you know, is this anger helpful to me right now? If it's not, do something to put it down. Go ahead and exercise or read a funny book. Do something and let it go for now. Probably it'll be back soon. But then if you decide you want to use it, then you need to ask yourself, let's be strategic. I'm angry. What can I do? Can I do something at work to make the workplace better? You can even harness your anger for something that's not directly related to it. So I'm just worked up and angry about the world right now. Well, you know what? I've been putting off this difficult conversation, you know, over here. It could be with your folks, say, you know, so let's use this just anger. Anger gives courage. People don't really think about it that way. It gives you courage, and it can give you motivation. So let's use this. If there's something difficult you've been putting off, it could be painting your house or cleaning your house. Use it to do something constructive for yourself, for others. Use that anger, but you have to stop and think about how to be strategic about it.
I absolutely loved that one piece of advice. As I read through it and looked up some of the science myself, I was absolutely blown away by the fact that, yeah, you could use your anger. Maybe this anger is going to be the precipitating moment to get off your behind and ask for that raise, for you to actually pick up that placard and go protest, because now you finally reach that point that says, okay, you know something? They got a point, and I'd like to join them. Whatever. No violence or anything. Just go out there and speak your mind and, you know, be part of something one way or the other. Who knows, right? And I love the fact that anger can give you courage. It's almost like it just puts you in a very different place where before you were saying, should I, could I, would I? And all of a sudden, boom, we're done. You're going to. And I think as you pointed out, one of your experts said, think of anger as an energizing emotion and the opposite of procrastination. That stuck in my craw. I just love that because it is, and I never thought of it that way. That's really cool, don't you think?
I think it's really great. I think of it in my own life this way. I live in Miami. The ocean's here. I'm a big ocean person. I dive. I sail. I care a lot about the ocean environment. I'm also separately very stressed and angry about things that are going on in the world right now. I can't fix the economy. I can't stop the pandemic. But you know what? I can go out and you know, clean up the beach, or I can give some money to an environmental group, or I could, you know, write some letters to Congress people trying to help the environment. It doesn't even have to be focused on what I'm angry about. I can feel sort of right now, I think everybody's feeling almost global anger, but you can choose something that you're going to channel that into to try to make a positive effect in the world. And that's where this strategic thought about anger. That's why I think it's so fascinating. Anger just gets you up off the couch.
Hell yeah, it does. I just think that one piece of advice, that whole spend your anger well kind of advice, is really thought-provoking. I think most of our Her podcast listeners are going, huh, never thought of it that way. Never thought of it that way. All right. Now, the next one is calm your nervous system. All right, we kind of talked about this a little bit, which is the whole issue of the meditation, the exercise, the prayer. So you're really, you know, suggesting not only just going for a walk or run, but come on down to nature. How about nature?
Come to nature. There's so much research. Nature helps us calm down. It could just be a walk around your neighborhood, go sit in the backyard or on your balcony. But even if you think, oh my gosh, you know, I'm holed up in an apartment in New York City, there's not a lot of nature at this moment in a pandemic, call it up on your phone. You know, look at some pretty pictures, look at some videos, put on an app that's going to give you nature sounds, ocean sounds, you know, rain sounds. I like to call some of those up when I sleep. The sound of the storm is pretty nice. There's apps that do this. So, you know, just find a way, even if you can't get out in nature, look at old photos where you were in nature. Do something to consciously put yourself in a place that's calming. That's really the key here.
Ooh, now let's go to a science place, and that means when you're calming your nervous system, it's all about breath-focused attention. Let's talk about breathing.
Breathing calms you down. And so this breath-focused attention, what I love about this is people think, oh, I have to breathe deeply, I have to breathe slowly, I have to count in four counts, count out, however many counts. Well, yes, that's all great. But what you don't have to do that. All you have to do is sit and breathe. But the key is that you pay attention to it. Just listen to yourself breathe. Pay attention to the actual sensation of the breath leaving your nose, coming back in, your nostrils, breath going in and out. Research has shown that this, it's called breath-focused attention, calms you down, calms your nervous system down. So it's that simple. Breathe and pay attention to your breath.
And it just calms down that part of the brain that's the fight and flight. And so the interesting thing is your brain can't do two things at one time. It cannot be fearful, angry, you know, jumping off a ledge. At the same time, it's calm. It just can't. So you have a choice, right? So you're either going to consciously breathe deeply and really be determined to calm your nervous system, or just let the whole thing go to hell, which is not what we want here. All right, now, here's another interesting tip you've given us. Reduce other irritants. What's going on with that?
Well, you know, when we don't feel well, we tend to get grumpy and angry, right? So if your back hurts because you're slouched over, or your desk chair is awful, or, you know, you're working at the kitchen counter now in some awful chair, or your bed's lumpy. For me, if there's clutter all over the place, I just find it aggravating. I get annoyed by it. Now I'm mad just from the clutter. So sort of you want to create a calm environment, but you want to get rid of anything that's making you physically uncomfortable, and especially like causing some physical pain, because that's also, you know, you may not realize it, but it's making you hangry.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And, you know, I think when I saw that, you were saying chair, lighting, bed, but you know, one of the biggest ones that makes people really fun to be with is sleep deprivation. And, you know, when you don't get enough sleep, you're no fun to be with. You're actually angry at everything. You don't think straight. You're not certainly not strategic. And there's a whole host of science-related reasons why that takes place. So, you know, when we're having so much uncertainty, fear out there, people wondering what's going to happen with their job, economic uncertainty, let alone, you know, medical and health uncertainty, I'm sure that feeds into it, don't you think?
Oh, it completely feeds into it. I mean, there's so much research, as you say, on sleep. It can, you know, good sleep can help you with depression, all sorts of things. It, of course, it's hard to sleep when you're anxious and depressed and worried and terrified. That's why it's more important to try to create an atmosphere, create that atmosphere in your bedroom that is calm and, you know, don't take your phone in, don't put on the news before bed, these kinds of things. But sleep's really important, and we're in a culture that sort of devalues sleep. People brag, oh, I only sleep 4 or 5 hours a night. Okay, that's not good. And I think that, you know, if people are really honest with themselves, they know that. So sleep is important, but creating it, a way to do it, working hard at it, if you're up in the middle of the night, try to catch up later, it's hugely important.
What about if you live with someone who's just constantly angry? Aren't they an irritant too? What do you do with something like that?
That is a huge irritant. And of course, you know, if you just confront them outright, especially if you confront them when you're angry, that's not going to go well. It's just going to be an argument, and now we're all angry. But I would say that, you know, choose your moment when they're less angry and sort of say, honey, I have to talk. We need to talk. Of course, who wants to hear that, right? But hey, honey, you know, can I chat with you? I always try to use the word chat. It's much more easygoing than talk, but could we chat? You know, look, your anger, I've noticed you're really angry. Is something going on? I always think if you notice something going on with somebody, ask them about it instead of telling them immediately how that's hurting you. Ask them what's going on first. Go into it with empathy and then have that discussion and let it lead to, hey, we've got to calm this anger down here in this house.
Well, that actually leads us to the final tip, which was reframe the story, you know, kind of define a new narrative. So you had brought up the point about, well, you know, somebody has made you mad, and maybe they themselves are super angry, and that's what made you mad. Who the heck knows? But redefining and trying to really perceive what's going on in their life differently helps. So tell us how to reframe the story in a way that doesn't seem like it's mission impossible, because a lot of people are like, no, they're wrong and I'm right, and type of thing.
Well, that's, you know, that's how we feel, because, you know, obviously we've been triggered. We feel that we've been wronged. So, you know, unfortunately we feel, yes, they're wrong and I'm right, but they feel the same way, right? So now we're at an impasse. We both feel we're wrong and the other person's right. What you need to do here is put yourself in that other person's shoes. Try to really think, and this is reframing the story. You know, think about what's going on. Say, you know, my colleague B bit my head off at something. You know, now I'm furious. I didn't deserve that. Well, let me stop and think. What do I know about my colleague's life right now? Oh, I know my colleague's working from home suddenly with two small children and a husband. Oh, yeah, she mentioned her husband's really grumpy this week because he's worried about getting laid off. You want to follow it through. What is really going on in that person's life that might have made them treat me in a way that wasn't fair? And so once I understand, gosh, my colleague's really having trouble right now, I kind of get it. Now I don't blame her. Now I feel, okay, you know, let me let that go. You can make a decision. Now your brain, again, your thinking brain's back online. I can make a decision. You know what? I'm going to let it go, or I'm going to say, hey, I didn't appreciate that, but I know you're upset. Whatever it is, but at least I'm thinking now about a careful, positive way to go through this. The key is you want to think about why that other person behaved the way they are, that when you figure that out, you're going to blame them less, and now you're going to think better.
You know, I think that this is where you have to tap into your prefrontal cortex. This is where you can actually make that shift from anger to empathy, where we could stop the blame game and all of that, and really try as best one can to understand them a little bit. May not agree with them, but at least understand a little bit about why they're all worked up, or they're getting on your case, or they're angry at the world, or whatever their issue may be. I always love, you know, I don't know if you ever read that book by Ruiz called The Four Agreements, which is an incredibly famous book. It's used in recovery programs a lot, but it's just a no-brainer. It's been around since, you know, dirt. And the second agreement, which is really interesting, it's like under no circumstances take anything personally, because it's almost never about you. It's about that person's narrative about you. And so it's like a colleague of mine once told me, that's their story about you, not your story about you. So in many respects, when you reframe the story, You have to be at a place in your life where you know who you are. You've defined your own narrative. So when someone's coming on your case or they're irritating you, you know who you are. So you stand your ground, and deep inside, from that point, which is a very high level of maturity and self-awareness, then you can, you know, kind of go to the empathy. What do you think of that thought?
I think it's very important. You know, somebody mentioned this to me recently, this idea that when we control our emotions, we're becoming self-leaders. It's really about self-leadership, and you can't really lead anybody else, even honestly your children, if you can't get a handle on your own leadership, leading yourself. And I love this idea that you have your story. It is a higher level of thinking and maturity, but you know, when you come to understand who you are and work on that, this is who I am, that I'm less buffeted by who this other person thinks I am. That is about them. If they're you know, making up stories about you, that is really, truly, deeply inside them about them. So I want to hold my center. I always think of it as being centered. If you sit up straight or stand up straight, think of that. I'm going to hold my center. I'm going to keep my storyline. I'm going to keep reframing it. I'm going to try to understand them, though, and deal with them with empathy. I'm not going to be buffeted by everybody else's opinions of who I am, because I know who I am.
I love it. So everyone out there, just to summarize Elizabeth Bernstein's excellent tips to be able to do anger management: pinpoint the source of your anger, be strategic about what you're going to do with that, calm your nervous system, reduce other irritants, and reframe the story. All right. And again, I would highly recommend you read her incredible column. I just love it. Live for it. And it is called Bonds, B-O-N-D-S, on relationships. It's all about exploring social psychology and human interactions. It's in the Wall Street Journal. And I just think it's fabulous. And what we do here on the Her Podcast is, oh boy, we make it come alive. Elizabeth, once again, I cannot begin to thank you again for your words of wisdom and your blend of science on all things relationships.
Thank you so much for having me. I love talking to you. It's so interesting.
Oh boy, I just love this too. And everyone out there, run on over to iTunes right now. That is a command. And please rate and review the show. Want to hear from you. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and I love to hear from you because I'm the host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and please stay safe and stay well.